In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. I'm your host, as always, Larry Elise. On today's episode of Cold Case Friday, we're actually diving into a case that was eventually solved, but it took more than 20 years to bring the killers to justice. And that is the case of Tammy Bowers. She was just 18, full of dreams, excited for her 19th birthday, and ready to begin her adult life. But one late night in 1990, a simple call from a payphone turned into a nightmare. What happened next would haunt a Louisiana town for decades. And like I mentioned, take 22 years to solve. Today we're diving into the tragic and heartbreaking case of Tammy Bowers, a young woman from Louisiana who was abducted in the middle of the night while using a payphone just days before her birthday. This case is not just horrifying in its brutality, but also chilling in how long it took to bring her killers to justice. Thanks to advancements in forensic science and persistent investigators, a shocking confession eventually cracked the case wide open. But before we get into the full timeline, I want to give a clear content warning. This video contains graphic themes including rape, sexual assault, and domestic abuse. So please proceed with care. If you don't want to watch this one, that's totally understandable for me. You can go check out a different video or come back here next Monday for a new episode of Murder Monday. But if you're still here, I post in-depth true crime cases like this every single week. So if that's something you're interested in, please consider subscribing and turning on the notification bell so you never miss an episode. Now let's take a closer look at the disturbing and long unsolved murder of Tammy Bowers. So for this week, we're going back more than 34 years to March 1990 in Ascension Parish, which is an area located in the state of Louisiana. It's about 25 miles south of the capital of Louisiana, Baton Rouge. And this, right here, is Tammy Bowers. She was an 18-year-old woman who lived in Ascension Parish. Excuse me. Tammy was born on the 8th of March, 1971. Her father was named Dean. Her mother was named Joyce. And I believe Tammy was one of four siblings. I knew she had a younger sister. She also had younger brothers, but I didn't know exactly how many brothers she had. I think it was two, but it could have been more. So take that with a pinch of salt. But Tammy was the oldest in the family, the oldest child. So naturally, she was always a very helpful little girl growing up, always happy to help her parents look after her siblings. Unfortunately, there isn't really much information online that I could find about Tammy's childhood, so I can't really comment on what it was like for her. But Tammy grew up to be an incredibly talented young woman. She was really good at kind of all things theatrical. She was a singer, and she had a lovely voice. She would literally sing all the time. She also played guitar, and her mother, Joyce, said that Tammy's main passion in life was music. She just adored music. It was Tammy's dream to get into show business when she was older. More specifically, she dreamed of becoming an actress. That was the career that she so desperately wanted. But for the time being, as an 18-year-old girl, she was working in a grocery store. And her mother, Joyce, said that Tammy had reached a point where she had really started to become that much more independent in life. She'd actually moved out of the family home by this point. In fact, she moved out just a few days before this case took place. She started living with a friend of hers named Jamie in a trailer in Ascension Parish. And she also recently got her own car, which she was obviously paying for. It was a very exciting time in her life. She probably felt all grown up. She was just entering adulthood and she was ready to be self-sufficient and start building a life for herself. Her future was right in front of her. And Tammy was also very excited because her birthday was coming up. She was going to be turning 19 and she couldn't wait. She couldn't wait to celebrate with her friends and family. However, tragically, as it would turn out, these birthday celebrations would never actually occur for Tammy Bowers, as just a couple of days before she was due to turn 19, she would mysteriously vanish one late March night. The date was March 6, 1990. It was a Tuesday, and that Tuesday evening, 18-year-old Tammy was at a payphone, which was located outside of a convenience store in Ascension Parish. It was called the Lil Pell's Convenience Store, just off of Highway 73 and 74. And yes, she was using this payphone because she and her roommate didn't actually have a telephone yet at their trailer. Obviously, they just moved in, so they hadn't gotten that sorted out yet. So Tammy went to this payphone and she first rang her mother, Joyce, and was chatting to her. And they were chatting about a couple different things, including the fact that it was Tammy's birthday in a few days and how she was very excited. She was looking forward to her celebration. She told her mom that she planned to invite all of her friends over and have a bit of a get-together or a bit of a party kind of thing. And then when her phone call with her mom ended, Tammy proceeded to ring someone else in her life, a young man named Steve Avila. Now, I believe Steve was someone that Tammy worked with. As I said, she worked at a grocery store, so they were co-workers there. But also, they were kind of starting to become more than that. By this point in time, she and Steve had started to see each other romantically. I suppose you could say they started dating. So yes, after speaking with her mother, Tammy rang Steve from the payphone. And this was around 11 p.m. at night of the 6th. They had a very normal conversation. Apparently, Tammy told Steve that she had just went to the convenience store. She once again chatted about her 19th birthday. She started telling Steve about what she had been up to recently, and everything seemed fine and normal. That was until the tone of this friendly phone call changed drastically, when all of a sudden Steve heard a scream. He heard Tammy start screaming on the other end of the line, this blood-curdling scream. He heard Tammy shouting, "Oh no!" He could hear what sounded like a struggle, and then moments later, he heard the sound of a car driving away quickly. And then after that, silence. Complete silence. It sounded like Tammy had just been attacked and abducted outside while she was at the payphone. So of course, extremely panicked, Steve immediately jumped into his vehicle, and he drove as quickly as he could to that convenience store off of Highway 73 to the payphone. And as soon as he arrived, what he saw there just confirmed in his brain that, yes, Tammy had been kidnapped. Obviously, Tammy was gone. She was nowhere to be found. But her car was still there. It was left unlocked, and her keys were still in the ignition. Her purse was in her car. The phone was left dangling from a payphone, as if, you know, Tammy had just dropped it in struggle. And lying on the ground was Tammy Bauer's glasses, and they were broken. Both of the lenses had been smashed out again, suggesting a violent struggle. And there was also a black baseball cap and a pocket knife lying on the ground beside the glasses. And this pocket knife was kind of half open. Now, I don't know whether it was established if this pocket knife was Tammy's or perhaps her attacker's. If it was Tammy's, then the fact it was on the ground probably suggested she had been trying to get it out during the struggle to defend herself. Or if it was her attacker's pocket knife, then they were clearly using it to threaten her and again, dropped it during the struggle. Now, because Tammy wasn't at the payphone when Steve arrived, the next thing he decided to do was quickly rush to Tammy's home, her trailer, just in case there was a chance that she was there. But of course, when he arrived, she wasn't. Steve told Tammy's roommate, Jamie, what had just happened, and she was also very panicked and scared. So once again, Steve jumped back in his car, drove back to the payphone, and he used it to call 911 to report that his coworker and the girl that he had just started dating was missing. She had been abducted. So, of course, police officers were immediately dispatched to the scene of the crime, to the payphone where they met with Steve. They took a statement, they started looking around the area to try to piece this crime together, and obviously they too came to the same conclusion that yes, this was a clear kidnapping. So searches for Tammy swiftly began. The police started conducting door-to-door inquiries, asking local residents if they had seen or heard anything. They also began to just trying to spread the word on Tammy's disappearance as much as possible. They immediately notified other local police forces that, you know, a young woman was missing. She had just been abducted and taken away in her car, and so to keep an eye out for her. And as all this was happening, as this missing person investigation was just getting started, officers were also sent to Tammy's family home in the early hours of the 7th of March to inform her loved ones about what had happened. And of course, they were so shocked and so frightened, her mother Joyce said that she almost collapsed when officers told her the news. She couldn't hold herself up because this instant fear for her daughter's safety just overwhelmed her. They were terrified. Everyone in Tammy's life was terrified, and they were just waiting and waiting for any news. I can only imagine that in a situation like this, time must just pass so slowly. Every minute that passed by without Tammy having been found probably felt like an hour for her family. And they were just desperately hoping that police would soon inform them that Tammy had been found, and that she was alive and was okay. But tragically, that update, they would never get. It's just 2 days later, police received information that the body of a young woman had been found. On March 8th, 1990, a member of the public, a man who worked for this energy company in Louisiana, was walking along River Road off of Highway 942 when all of a sudden he stumbled upon a gruesome scene. He He found the body of a young woman lying on the ground in this remote, kind of isolated area of the land. So he immediately contacted the police to report this discovery. And I think as soon as the police received this report, they just knew this had to be the body of Tammy. Obviously, she'd been missing since the evening of the 6th. They'd been searching tirelessly for her, so they knew that this was Tammy. Although, upon arriving at the scene, they couldn't actually tell this just from looking at her body because her injuries were so awful that she was unrecognizable. Of course, this was a homicide. Police knew that Tammy had been murdered, and the way that she was murdered is just horrific. It was clear that Tammy had been viciously beaten around the head, face, and neck. Detectives described how she had been beaten, quote, beaten beyond recognition. According to one report, she'd also been stabbed. She was stabbed in the chest and in her neck. But these stab wounds were not what killed her. It was the beating about the head that was established to have been her cause of death. Later in her autopsy, the medical examiner noted that her jaw was fractured from the beating, her upper spine was fractured, she suffered a major fracture to the top of the head, and there was bleeding inside of her skull. Her brainstem was severely injured. It was unbelievable. The amount of violence and brutality that was used here to kill Tammy was just pure evil. And like I said, she was beaten so viciously to the point where she just left in a state that she was completely unrecognizable. But the police were able to positively identify Tammy Bowers as being the murder victim from her clothing and jewelry that she was wearing, which matched the description of Tammy's jewelry. In fact, she was even wearing a ring which literally had her name, Tammy Bowers, engraved into it. So they knew that this was her. So Tammy had been found horrifically murdered on what would have been her 19th birthday. She was found by the worker on the 8th of March, the day that she should have turned 19. The day that she was so excited for, but never got to see. Tammy was found kind of partially clothed. Apparently she was still wearing her bra, and I think her sweatpants, but her top had been removed, and a black t-shirt and a green blood-stained shirt were found nearby. Of course, the fact that she was partially clothed instantly indicated to detectives that the motive for this crime was sexual, which was later confirmed in her autopsy. Tammy Bowers had been raped by her killer. And what also became clear to the investigators as they continued looking around the scene was that this was the place where Tammy was killed. She wasn't murdered elsewhere and then just dumped here. This was the murder scene. This remote, isolated road was the last place that Tammy Bowers ever saw. Now, as I mentioned, this road was called River Road and was located off of Highway 942. So I believe that's about 24 miles away from the payphone off of Highway 73, where she was originally abducted from. So she was abducted from the payphone, forced into a car, and then driven to River Road, where she was raped, stabbed, and beaten to death. And the reason the police know that she was killed in the place where she was found was because, again, there were signs of a violent struggle. Blood was found in the grass at the scene, and a blood-stained wooden log was also found nearby. And in fact, police were able to determine that this log, a big chunk of wood, was the murder weapon. This is what the killer used to beat Tammy around the head. But Tammy didn't make it easy for the attacker. My God, did she put up a fight. She was said to have defensive injuries all over her arms and her hands and her fingers from where she had tried so incredibly hard to fight back, to fight for her life. The amount of self-defense marks on her even indicated that Tammy had probably injured the attacker himself during the struggle. She was fighting back that much with everything that she had. So all this evidence found at the crime scene was photographed and collected. They collected the clothing, the wooden log, samples from Tammy's body were obviously collected, and a murder inquiry was officially launched. The hunt was on to find the evil man that had cruelly taken the life of this young, innocent woman. And it wasn't long at all before the police had their first suspect in this case. It was Tammy Bowers' ex-boyfriend. Now, I couldn't actually find his name anywhere online, so I'm just going to refer to him as, of course, the ex-boyfriend. But yep, he was an instant suspect for the detectives. I think even before Tammy's body was found, while she was still just missing, they started looking at him as possibly being responsible for her abduction, not just because he was her ex, and the police always look at exes in these kind of investigations, but they became particularly suspicious of him because what they came to learn was that he was abusive towards Tammy, and in fact, he had been essentially stalking her in the lead-up to her death. Excuse me. Tammy, I think, recently broken up with her ex, she decided that she just didn't want to be with him anymore. And as we know, she was kind of starting to move on with that guy, or with that guy from her work, Steve, the man who reported Tammy's abduction to the police. And apparently, Tammy's ex took this breakup very, very badly. He didn't want to be apart from Tammy, and it's likely that he was very jealous and angry when he found out about Steve. And when the police spoke to Tammy's mother, Joyce, she actually informed them about an altercation between Tammy and her ex that happened the same day their daughter was kidnapped. Literally, hours before. So as we know, before speaking to Steve at the payphone that night, Tammy also had a phone call with Joyce. And during this call, Tammy told her mom that earlier that evening, that same evening, her ex just turned up at her trailer demanding that Tammy let him in. And when Tammy refused to do so, he tried to literally break in through the window. Now, thankfully, I don't think he was successful, and eventually he left. But this altercation really spooked Tammy, as you can imagine. And she was scared of her ex. He had a temper. And yeah, her mother Joy said that she was frightened of him because he just would not leave her alone after she broke up with him. Like I said, he was basically stalking her because he wouldn't let her just get on with her life. He was constantly trying to convince her to get back with him, so it really seemed like her ex could have had a motive here. And the fact that he tried to break into her home just hours before Tammy was kidnapped, surely that's not a coincidence. What if he abducted Tammy and he killed her? Because if he couldn't have her, she wasn't going to date him, then he would make sure that she was never going to date anyone else ever again. So the police made contact with the ex. They asked him to come in for an interview, and when he did, suspicion towards him only grew for the detectives for a number of reasons. Number one, he immediately became very, very defensive when they started asking him questions, and he quickly asked for a lawyer, which obviously he has every right to, every right to ask for a lawyer, but in the police's eye, they were kind of just thinking, well, if you're innocent of this crime, why are you not willing to cooperate with us and answer our questions? At the end of the day, Tammy was someone that you once loved, and I suppose clearly still loved, considering that you were still pursuing her. So yeah, the fact that he was so defensive and asked for a lawyer so quickly did make alarm bells ring a little. But I think the main reason why detectives were very skeptical of the ex was because they did notice that he had actually had scratches on him. He had fresh scratch marks on his arms as if he had recently been in some kind of fight. So police asked him about these scratches, and guess what? He said they were from Tammy. He said they were inflicted by Tammy during a heated argument that they'd had the day before she was kidnapped. An argument which turned physical. However, he was adamant that he was not her killer. He was not the one who abducted her from the payphone, and he was not the one who beat her to death on that roadside. So the police had to delve further into his alibi in order to either rule him in or rule him out. And he claimed that that night, on March 6th, he had been out with some friends of his, and then following this, he just went home. And he was in for the night, which, as it would turn out, the police could confirm. In fact, believe it or not, it was through Steve, the new guy that Tammy was dating, that they were able to confirm her ex-boyfriend's alibi. And he claimed that the night of the 6th of March, he had been out with some friends of his, and then following this, he just went home and he was in for the night, which, as it would turn out, the police could confirm. In fact, believe it or not, it was through Steve, the new guy that Tammy was dating, her co-worker, that they were able to confirm her ex-boyfriend's alibi. You see, Steve told the police that Tammy's ex was one of the first people that he called after Tammy was abducted. After he heard her scream on the phone, even before he called 911, he called her ex. I guess to check that she wasn't with him. Who knows, maybe he even thought initially that her ex could be involved. So the reason the police could verify the ex's alibi based on this was because it put him at his address at the time of, or very shortly after, Tammy was kidnapped. Obviously, he would have spoken to Steve on his landline. This was a time before everyone had mobile phones. So yeah, this pretty much verified the ex-boyfriend's alibi. He couldn't have been Tammy's killer because he was at his house, nowhere near the scene of the crime, the payphone, at the time that Tammy was attacked. And so, that was the ex officially ruled out. But to be fair, this wasn't the only reason why the ex-boyfriend was ruled out of the inquiry. You see, after Tammy's body was found, and the more the police really thought about this crime, the more convinced that there was probably more than just one killer. They really theorized that Tammy could have been kidnapped and murdered by at least two people, because for one person to kidnap and hold a young woman hostage in a car while also driving those 24 miles to the location where she was killed, I don't know, the police just weren't sure if it would have been very possible for one person to do that on their own. So it was a big theory in this case early on that they may have been looking for two perpetrators in this case. Following the discovery of Tammy's body, word spread pretty rapidly around the area and surrounding areas that, a young woman abducted from a payphone had been found murdered. And with this, as word spread, the police did start to receive a number of tips.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
And leads from the public, the majority of which were just dead ends. Excuse me. However, there was one which seemed to stand out to the detectives. It came from a truck driver named David Rathburn, and he told police that on the night of the 6th, the night that Tammy was attacked, he had actually seen her at the payphone outside the convenience store. He said he drove by the convenience store in his truck as he did, he happened to look towards the payphone, and there he saw a young woman matching Tammy's description. But that wasn't all that he saw. Standing behind Tammy was a man, a tall black man. He had just gotten out of what looked like a light-colored Ford Gran Torino. And he began quickly approaching Tammy at the payphone. Now, that was all that David, the truck driver, saw. He didn't see the attack taking place or see Tammy being forced into the vehicle. Because as I said, he was literally just driving by. So yeah, he didn't actually see the abduction, but he did see a man approaching Tammy from behind. So now the police had a description of the perpetrator. I mean, it was a very vague description. As I said, all David could really tell the police about this man was that he was tall and black. But hey, it was a description nonetheless. It did actually mean that the police could basically rule everyone in Tammy's life out as being the killer. Because there was no one in her life that matched this description of the man seen. And there was also no one who had this type of vehicle, a Ford Gran Torino. So the police could now say with some confidence that the killer or killers were most likely strangers to Tammy. She didn't know them, and perhaps they were out that night just looking for a young woman that they could kidnap, sexually assault, and kill. Meanwhile, as the investigation continued, the police carried on with looking into the various tips and leads that had come in from members of the public, some of which were even names of potential suspects, people that they thought the police might want to look at as possibly being involved. However, unfortunately, the police were never able to definitively link any of them to the crime. Every person of interest, the police seemed to eventually be able to rule out. And naturally, over time, the tips and leads started to dry up. And Tammy's case, tragically, started to go cold. As the months and years passed, the police were forced to start working on other, newer investigations. Meaning that Tammy's loved ones were left without answers. They didn't have that closure of seeing the evil monster that had done this to Tammy being brought to justice. Which, as you can imagine, was just horrendous for them. And what really broke my heart while I was researching the case is the fact that Tammy's mother, Joyce, said that she used to go to bed every single night. And before she went to sleep, she would speak to Tammy. She would speak to her daughter. She would promise her that they would never, ever give up the search for her killer. They would never stop looking for the man who took her life, so that one day she could finally rest in peace. But I mean, Joyce admitted that even though she would make these promises, even she got to the point where her hope of her daughter's murder ever being solved, started to just decrease and decrease, especially as the years and years passed by. She really started to believe that Tammy would never get justice for her death. But then came 2002. When 2002 rolled around, it was 12 whole years since Tammy Bowers was murdered, and it was 2002 when Tammy's cold case was effectively reopened. And it was taken over by Captain Mike Tony from the Ascension Parish Sheriff's Office. It was Captain Tony's hope that now, 12 years on, they might finally be able to solve the mystery of who killed Tammy Bowers, using advancements in forensic science. Because obviously, when Tammy was killed in 1990, DNA and forensic technology was still very much in its infancy, and still very new. But by 2002, it had come a long way. It developed a lot. So Captain Tony hoped that these advancements would be the key. Would provide the breakthrough that the police needed in finally identifying the killer, or, like they believe, killers. So what he decided to do was to send much of the old evidence that was collected in Tammy's case off for testing and re-examination. So for example, Tammy's clothing, like her sweatpants, and also the swabs and samples taken from her body during her rape kit. Obviously, we know that she was raped by her attacker, so they did have samples of the killer's semen. But they couldn't really do anything with this evidence at the time. They couldn't use it to positively identify the perpetrator. So yeah, all of this evidence was sent off for testing, and luckily, they had that breakthrough. scientists were able to extract a DNA profile from the evidence. This was the DNA profile of Tammy's murder. Or murderer, I should say. So this was an enormous development in the case. They were now one huge step closer to catching the person responsible for this crime. So as soon as they obtained this DNA profile, it was entered into the CODIS database in search for a match. But sadly, there wasn't one. The killer's DNA was not in the system, which of course was very disappointing for the team. You know, they had this big, big success of obtaining the killer's DNA profile, but without a match, they were still just in the dark, still none the wiser as to who murdered Tammy. And I suppose all they could really do from now on was wait. If they had a new suspect suddenly emerge in Tammy's case, they could get their DNA sample and test it against the killers. But apart from that, they would have to just wait it out and hope that a match would eventually pop up on CODIS. Hope that the killer would slip up, be caught for a crime, and that their DNA would finally be entered into the system. And about 3 to 4 years later, in December of 2006, that long wait came to an end. When Captain Mike Tony was informed that there had been a hit, a match had finally flagged up in the CODIS database. A match to the DNA profile of Tammy Bauer's killer. And that match was to a man named Herman Frazier. So, just for a bit of information about him, Herman Frazier was born in 1967, so he was around his mid-30s by this point in 2006, meaning that at the time of Tammy's murder, he would have been around 23, 24, I believe, if my math is correct, which wasn't great in math, so. But it should be, yeah, something around 23, 24, so mid-20s. It was from the city of Gonzales in Louisiana, and I think that was where he was living in the 90s when Tammy was abducted. And it's actually only about 5 miles away from Ascension Parish, so it's very close by for him to be able to commit the crime. And apparently, Herman Frazier had been arrested a few times over the years for relatively minor crimes, such as theft and burglary. But from what I can gather, his DNA wasn't entered into CODIS until around 2005, 2006. When he was arrested for unlawful entry of a business, so burglary once again. Essentially burglary and breaking into a business premises. But that was it, really. He'd never been arrested for any kind of violent crime, and there was nothing in his background that the police could find that really indicated that he was a particularly violent and aggressive individual. And so he'd never been looked at it as a suspect in the case of Tammy Bauer's over the last 16 years of the crime being unsolved. But, as we know, it was in late 2006 when Frazier's DNA came back as a match to Tammy Bauer's killer DNA. So the police quickly moved in to arrest him. He was arrested for the kidnap, rape, and murder of 18-year-old Tammy Bowers. Following his arrest, Herman Frazier was obviously questioned by detectives. And this questioning was just kind of bizarre and exhausting for the police, to be honest. For the most part, Frazier basically refused to say anything. Refused to cooperate, refused to talk. The detectives were trying to ask him questions about Tammy's murder, trying to get him to just confess and tell them whether or not he had an accomplice to this crime. Because, as we've discussed, the police had always had a theory, pretty much right from the start, that Tammy may have been abducted and killed by two people that night, not just one. And again, when you look at Herman Frazier's background, his criminal history for the police, he didn't necessarily fit the profile of a sadistic killer. You know, he'd never been arrested or linked to any violent crime or any other attacks or assaults. So while they knew from the DNA evidence that he definitely was involved in what had happened to Tammy that night, they still believed that he probably didn't carry out this crime alone. He probably had an accomplice. So they were trying to ask him about this, about who the second perpetrator was, but he really wouldn't say anything. The only thing that he would say during his interrogation was he would make these weird comments like, "Oh, there's more to this story than you know, and one day I'll tell you the full story." But that was it. He wouldn't divulge what this story was, just that there was a story. So as I understand it, he wasn't outright confessing that he was involved in Tammy's murder, but he also wasn't necessarily denying it either. He was just being quite difficult, to be honest. But anyways, the detectives just went ahead and they charged him. He was charged with the kidnap, rape, and murder of Tammy Bowers. And he went to trial 20 years after the crime in 2010. And on the very first day of the trial, Herman did something very unexpected. He requested to take the stand and address the courtroom. He had something that he wanted to say. Apparently, this was the time that Herman Frazier had finally chosen to tell his side of the story. On the first day of his trial for murder, he decided to shock everyone and finally admit that yes, there was a second man involved in the crime. He didn't commit this murder alone. He told the courtroom that his accomplice was an individual by the name of Tolbert Morris Jr., and he began giving his account of that fateful night, which is as follows. So Tolbert Morris Jr. was, I think, about 12 years or so older than Herman. Obviously, we know that Herman was around 23 when Tammy was killed, and I believe Tolbert was around 35. And Tolbert was also a criminal, career criminal, and he actually had a lengthy criminal record, which did include some pretty violent crimes. Now, there isn't really any information online that I could find about the specifics surrounding Morris's crimes, just that they were violent in nature. So he definitely did seem like someone who could have been capable of committing this crime. And I read on one source that Herman and Tolbert had actually known each other for a relatively long time. I think Tolbert was a friend of Herman's family, so Herman had kind of grown up around him. And when Herman was in his 20s, the two of them started hanging out a lot. And Herman would kind of paint this picture of how he was quite easily influenced by Tolbert Morris. I suppose, you know, he was a lot older than him. Frazier was young and impressionable. And he knew that Tolbert was bad news, the bad kind of person to be hanging around with because of his criminal activity. But he did so regardless. Anyway, on the night in question, the night of the 6th of March 1990, Herman Frazier claimed that he was with Tolbert. He was a passenger in his car. The two of them were drinking alcohol, and Morris was just driving around Ascension Parish when all of a sudden something caught his eye, or someone caught his eye, I should say. It was a young man, standing by a payphone outside of the Lil Pal's convenience store in Ascension Parish. This young woman was, of course, Tammy Bowers, and Herman said that for some reason, in that moment, Tolbert Morris had clearly decided that he was going to kidnap this young woman, because he pulled the car into the parking lot, got out, approached Tammy from behind, and just grabbed her. Herman Frazier said that he watched from the car as a violent struggle took place between Tammy and Morris. Tammy was screaming, she was trying to resist, but Tolbert was able to overpower her, and he dropped her back to his vehicle and put her into the back seat. Now, I did read one source that during the struggle at the payphone, Tolbert actually hit Tammy, and he did manage to knock her out, knock her unconscious, hence why he was able to get her into the back seat. And from here, Morris drove for about 15 minutes until he stopped in this quiet gravel lane. And it was then when Frazier said that Morris dragged Tammy out of the car, raped her, then forced her back into the car, and once again started driving. He drove to a second location. He drove to River Road off of Highway 942. And when they arrived, Tammy was once again pulled from the car, where she was raped a second time by Tolbert. She was actually raped at knife point. Morris was threatening Tammy with a knife. And then once he was finished, Herman actually claimed that Morris turned to him and said, quote, "You might as well take your turn," as in Frazier might as well have his go at raping Tammy. And so he did, proceeded to rape her as well. Frazier tried to claim that Tolbert forced him to sexually assault Tammy. Not quite sure I believe that, but that's what he was claiming. And then he said that it was following this, when Morris grabbed Tammy's hand, he started pulling her down this dirt road, and it was then when Morris began beating Tammy to death. He stabbed her with his knife, picked up that wooden log, and began hitting her with it over and over and over again. Tammy was screaming. She was trying to fight back, and Herman actually said that while all this was happening, he just panicked and ran away. While Tolbert was beating Tammy to death, Herman just started running, and he went and hid somewhere. And Morris eventually returned to his car and drove away, leaving Tammy's badly beaten body on the ground, on that roadside where she was found 2 days later on her 19th birthday. And that was it. That was Herman Frazier's story that he gave on day one of his trial. Now, the police did believe Herman Frazier's account, I think for the most part. I think they thought that the majority of it was true, although they did think that it was rather convenient that he tried to kind of separate himself from the crime as much as he could. He tried to put as much blame on Tolbert as he could by, you know, claiming that it was Morris who kidnapped Tammy from the payphone. It was Morris who drove her to River Road. It was Morris who raped her and forced him to rape her too. And it was Morris who killed her. So yeah, it was very obvious that he was trying to, I guess, diminish his part in the crime as much as possible. But the police did believe that he was telling the truth and that Tolbert was probably the ringleader here. And so, they actually decided to offer Herman Frazier a plea deal. Now, as we know, Herman was initially charged with the kidnap, rape, and murder of Tammy Bowers. However, following his confession, they said to Frazier that they would instead only charge him with second-degree kidnapping, forcible rape, and a manslaughter of Tammy Bowers, if he, of course, agreed to plead guilty to those charges, but also if he agreed to testify as a witness against Tolbert Morris when he would eventually go to trial. And Herman Frazier said yes. He accepted this plea deal, and so for his role in Tammy's murder, Herman was sentenced to 50 years in prison without the possibility of parole. After Herman Frazier gave his confession, in which he implicated Morris, he too was arrested. He was 54 at the time of his arrest. And although they had statements from Herman, the police knew that that would not be enough. If they were going to take Morris to trial for this crime, they needed to find DNA evidence linking him to it, just like they had linked Frazier with DNA. So detectives sent even more of the old evidence off to the crime lab for examination, and one item that was submitted for further testing was Tammy's green blood-stained shirt found near her body on River Road. Now, while I think most of the blood on the shirt was determined to have come from Tammy, there was some blood stains on there which were not a match to her DNA, and were also not a match to the DNA of Herman Frazier. So the police compared this unknown DNA profile to Tolbert Morris's DNA. And what do you know? It matched. It matched his DNA. In addition to that, scientists also found that Tolbert Morris's DNA was consistent with the DNA of a hair that was recovered from Tammy's body. And further circumstantial evidence against Tolbert was the fact that the car he drove at the time of Tammy's murder matched the description of the car that the truck driver said he saw. If you recall, David described the car as being light in color and possibly a Ford Gran Torino. Now, Morris didn't have a Gran Torino at the time, but he did have a light-colored Plymouth Duster, which apparently looks very similar to a Ford Gran Torino. So after obtaining all this evidence, the police went ahead and they charged Tolbert with second-degree kidnapping, aggravated rape, and second-degree murder. He was obviously charged in the second degree rather than the first degree, because I suppose the police couldn't necessarily prove that this crime was premeditated, that Morris had gone out that night with the intention of finding a young woman that he could rape and kill. I mean, from Herman Frazier's account of the night, it does seem as though it was, I guess, a split-second decision. Morris just saw Tammy at the payphone and decided in that moment to abduct her. Tolbert ended up going to trial in 2012 after he pleaded not guilty to all charges. It was the defense's argument that Herman Frazier had simply lied about Tolbert Morris being involved in this crime. And as we know, as part of his plea deal, Herman did testify against Morris. He was the main witness for the prosecution. And as well as his testimony, the prosecution also presented to the jury the other evidence that they had, which implicated Morris, including DNA evidence. And clearly, this was enough, because at the end of the trial, Tolbert was found guilty on all counts. And for his role in Tammy's murder, he received two terms of life in prison without the possibility of parole. One term for the murder charge, the second for the rape charge, and then for kidnapping, he received an additional 30 years. So it's safe to say he'll never be released. I believe Tolbert did immediately try to appeal his conviction, but he was unsuccessful. And both him and Frazier remain in prison to this day. I think they are both still alive and behind bars. But I couldn't find any other information about them in regards to updated status of them. It took 16 years for Herman Frazier to be identified, and a further 6 years after that for both killers to be convicted of Tammy's murder. 22 years in total for the crime to be solved. But thankfully, it was. Thankfully that Tammy finally got the justice that she deserved, and her family finally got those answers and the closure that they so desperately needed. But yes, that is it for this case. As always, please do let me know your thoughts and opinions on the case below in the comments. I'd love to hear what you guys thought. Let me know of any other cases that you'd like me to cover on this channel. They can be solved, unsolved, serial killer cases, you name it. Again, you can pop them in the comments below, or you can go through my social media. All the links are in the description, and let me know there. Thank you all so much for watching. Please do give this video a thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, don't forget, you can find us on all major podcast platforms, including Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. And with that, thank you so much for watching and listening. We will see you next time.